Welcome to the Midlife Chaos Podcast. I'm your host, Karen Michelle, a certified life and relationship coach, and I am so excited that you are here. The Midlife Chaos is for all of us facing midlife and wondering, how the heck did I get here? And where the flip am I going? Here we will talk about all the things that chaos brings. No topic is off the table, so join me on this adventure as we navigate the midlife chaos. We are continuing the series of friends joining me. Today I have my good friend Lacey. Lacey lost her husband to COVID in 2021. And being a young widow, she has had to learn how to navigate raising a teenage boy and young daughter on her own. And she has followed through on moving her family to North Dakota and jumping in and taking over her husband's trucking business. She is sharing her journey with us today of grief and the lessons that she has learned along the way. So welcome, Lacey. Okay, I want to welcome Lacey. She's here to talk about her story of her husband passing away. And we're just going to have a discussion about what that looks like.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us, you can go ahead and just kind of tell us a little about your background and Paul's passing. And then we'll talk about what that looks like moving on.
Okay. So we had been married for 17 years, and we both got COVID, and I got it first, and then a couple days later, he ended up with it, and unfortunately, he passed in September of 2021. Okay. There was a lot of lessons learned from it. One of the big ones was everything is in God's time, which sometimes can be difficult for people who think they're in control. That was a huge lesson learned for me. And the other big thing was, I think a lot of times the Lord is gracious and gives us promptings and heads ups to what can come if we listen and allow those through. And he definitely did that with me. In July, I had had a dream three nights in a row. In the first dream, Paul was telling me that he was going home. There was more to the dream, but the main was he was going home. And I'm like, oh, let me grab my stuff. And he's like, no, you don't understand. I'm going home to be with Heavenly Father. And I was like, no, that's not happening. And we argued, and I woke up panicked because it was so real. But he was in bed with me. And I'm like, oh, okay, just a crazy dream. The next night I had a dream, and I was arguing with him and Heavenly Father. And that, no, it's not his time. And then the third night it was just Heavenly Father and I. And him telling me he's done everything he needs to do. And I might have been a not nice arguer in that.
Right? Not and that kind of conversation.
So when he got vented, he had been on BiPAP for 5 days, and then he got vented.
Wow.
And I remember the second day of the venting, that morning driving to the hospital, and I said, Lord, you made me. You know my downfall. I don't care what the outcome is. I don't care if it's a week on the vent, a month, 6 months. I just need to know the outcome. Is he coming home with me? Or is he going home with you? And music is definitely my go-to. And I turned on my Spotify and hit my playlist, and somehow it went to Spotify Radio, which I don't know how that happens.
Yeah, I don't know how that works.
Yeah.
And Divine Intervention, maybe.
The song that came on was Heaven by Jake Owen. And I was like, there's your answer. Let me listen to these lyrics, because I'm pretty sure that you don't really mean that, Lord.
Oof.
And so about 4 or 5 days in ICU, and the day before he passed, with COVID, I couldn't drink coffee. And that morning, I got up. I was running late because I always tried to be there about 7:30 so the nurses could have their shift change and whatnot. And that morning, I'm running late, and I'm like, I need to go. But I just get this, you need to go get a cup of coffee.
Mm.
I'm like, no, I'm running late.
You're like, late. It doesn't taste good.
I can't
good.
Do that. Mm-hmm. And this morning, you'll need a cup of coffee. And so I ended up heading to the coffee shop. You know, you're late, and everything along the way makes you even later.
Of course.
School bus, everything. So at that point, I'm very frustrated. I get my cup of coffee, and I'm driving over the hill to the hospital, and I all of a sudden get this vision. And it is Heavenly Father sitting in a chair, and Paul's standing behind him smiling, and I feel I'm home. And I was like, oh, that
comforting.
Is so fabulous that you are up there just relaxing while your body's healing and you're coming back. That's
nice,
what I
nice.
Meant with that.
Okay.
So I get to the hospital, and I go into the desk to ask them to let me in. And the charge nurse for ICU sees me, and she tells the girl, I'm going to take her back. And so she's like, I just want you to know, when we get in there, it's a lot busier than usual. I was like, oh, I know. I've seen you guys bring in a lot of patients. And
sure.
She's like, I mean, in your husband's room. He went into AFib, and they're working to keep him. By the time we got there, the only one left in the room was the nurse. All the equipment was out. Everybody was gone, just his nurse.
So did you feel cheated? And maybe that's not the right word, but did you feel like, had you skipped the coffee, you could have been there when it happened? Or do you feel like it was a blessing that you weren't there?
I feel like it was a blessing. I feel like the Lord knew I wasn't in a place to be present at that time in that situation, not with my husband.
Oh,
had it been anybody else, I would have been fine, but not with him. And by the end of the evening, I mean, I had pointed out, you know, his breathing tube, something's off with that. So they checked him, and he didn't have they were concerned about a pulmonary embolism. And
this was the night before?
The night before he passed. And an anesthesiologist came by. He was a traveling anesthesiologist. And he asked the nurse, he's like, I think he's fighting his breathing tube.
Oh.
So they had, I felt like pretty early on, they had decided to take him off sedation to see where he was mentally.
Sure.
Because by the time they found him, he was already blue.
Oh.
He had fallen during the night and lost his BiPAP, and that's how he ended up on the vent.
Mm.
And so at that point, they were very concerned about brain function.
Sure.
And he had told them, I've seen it in other hospitals. If they're pulled off of sedation too quickly, they fight that breathing tube and they won't oxygenate. And so,
because they need that for the oxygen, and if they're fighting it, then they're definitely not okay.
And so at that point, the medication had reversed his AFib, but his sats were dropping fast.
I bet.
And so the doctor came in, and you know, he's like, I'm pretty sure he's gonna pass. And the nurse and the anesthesiologist, they kind of were like, well, what if if we just roll in? Like, mm-hmm. one last Hail Mary. That's what yeah. we need to do. Like, and the doctor's like, well, it can't get any worse. He's continually dropping, so go ahead and roll one. Mm-hmm. And his stats started to come up. But in the middle of the night, they began to tank again.
Yeah.
And then I got the call.
Mm-hmm.
To come in. He had passed. And so there are definitely a few things in those moments. I probably am not super proud of myself and how I handled it with my oldest.
I don't think that's something you can prepare how to handle.
No. I definitely did not give him an option to see his father, nor did I give my daughter the option. And I just walked in, flipped on his light, and said, your dad passed away. I need you to lay with your sister. I got to go get his things. And it was, if people had seen, they would probably think you are a cold, horrible woman. But it was such a state of shock.
Okay, and we've talked about this before. So our little trio of friends.
Yes.
Sometimes we're a little too real with each other, right? And I think being an outsider, looking into the situation, we're like, well, of course you should have had your kids mm-hmm. see them or, yes. you know, whatever. But it's like you said, it was such a state of shock. And then I have to think, is that the last viewing? Is that the last mm-hmm. image you want your kids to have of their dad versus we just remember the last time we were playing, the day yeah. before he got sick when things were fine. You know, let that be the last memory. Mm-hmm. Or do you want them to see this, you know, giant of a man, their father, hooked up to all the things. He's already blue and, I mean, he's already gone. And is that really, you know, so as far as like that closure, yeah, I can see the argument of you should have taken your kids. But on the other hand, the compassionate side says, I don't know if I would want to see my dad that way.
Yeah. And I actually, when we thought Paul was going to make it, I made Braden come in.
Mm-hmm.
Because in my mind, you know, maybe Paul hearing Braden's voice.
Sure.
It would be an incentive, you know. And that evening, he was like, I didn't want to go, Mom. I didn't want to see that.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, actually about 6 months ago, I went to him and I said, I need to apologize to you. He's like, for what? And I said, I didn't give you an option. I didn't give you an option for closure. I didn't give you an option to go to the hospital with me. I didn't give either one of you one. And he's like, don't ever apologize. He said, I am so thankful.
But how healing is that for him to hear you apologize? To even if it was, you know, just 6 months ago, but mm-hmm. to be like, you know, because maybe 10 years down the road, he might be, you know, a little more angsty about it. And he can say, at least my mom recognized. And I didn't want it, but at least she recognized and she was willing to apologize.
Yeah.
Wow.
So.
Can we talk about Braden really quick?
Yes.
Okay. So, and we've talked about this a few times where him and his dad didn't have the best relationship.
No.
And so part of your story is that Paul was living here in North Dakota running a business. You guys were back home.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of got that premonition months before that you really needed to be together as a family. And it was important to let's move the family up to North Dakota. That's all kind of backstory. But I feel like those last few months before Paul passed, him and Braden really did repair things. They really did finally have some kind of understanding of the relationship or some like a good mm-hmm. relationship. Would you?
It was crazy. That summer was the best summer that we had ever had as a family. I remember as Braden was completing the school year, I told Paul, I said, because they butted heads so much and there was so much animosity. Mm-hmm. Braden hated when he came home. And I remember telling Paul, I need you to take the time mm-hmm. to get to know your son, who he is, not who you want him to be.
Oh, that's good.
But who he truly is, I said, because he's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
If you give him the time. And I said, and the other thing, because I think subconsciously Paul knew his time was limited. Like, he had to get the most in teaching-wise to his son.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, and where the animosity and all those feelings came from is, you better get it the first time.
Yeah, because he's trying to do all this preparation. Yeah. Braden's a punk kid, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, teenagers, and so he's probably not paying attention or getting it yeah. or whatever.
And Paul's patience was not very good. And so I said, I know you're worried about putting your influence and your stable, you know,
mm-hmm.
into your boy.
Yeah.
I said, but you're ruining the relationship.
Mm.
I said, so all I ask is try to really just get to know him. I said, and in doing that, that includes when he comes to talk to you, yeah, you have 2 cents. I get it. I said, it's not that I don't want to give my 2 cents, but I have learned
bite your tongue a little.
Our son to open up, we need to keep it to ourselves. Yeah. And especially in that moment, maybe circle back around and
mm-hmm. yeah.
reiterate some of your thoughts later, but not right then in that moment. Just let him talk, hear him out, because yeah. Paul used to get very frustrated. Well, why does he'll just go talk to you. He doesn't do that with me. Well, yeah, because well. I learned the hard way years ago. I can't give my 2 cents.
Right.
Because it shuts him down. And so Paul really did embrace that.
Yeah.
That summer. And it was, we went camping, and the only time that there was really issues was setting up camp.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's probably the most stressful part of camping, yes. isn't it?
But the rest was just good.
Good.
And I told Braden, I said, what a blessing that summer was. I said, you guys actually got along.
Because he was pretty bitter,
mm-hmm.
You know, once Paul passed, it was like, we finally have a relationship. I finally have this with my dad. How dare God take him away from me, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. And that was a hard one, you know. And the interesting thing, the year before, it was 11 months before, Braden had lost one of his best friends.
Mm.
And he took that super hard.
Sure.
And looking back, I've told my mom more than once, the Lord was preparing him for a major loss.
That is a really good perspective. Mm-hmm. Because I think most people would think, you've taken my best friend, you've taken my dad, what next? Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, and it was a preparation.
Wow.
And the girl's probably the one who's taken it the hardest.
Yeah.
Because Paul and I made the mistake. And this is one thing that I think a big takeaway now. I remember Paul and I telling the kids, hey, we're taking dad to urgent care. Going to get some different medicine, see if we can get a shot for him or two.
Sure.
And we'll be back.
Hmm.
And here's the thing. If you're going anywhere for medical and you're leaving your kids at home, never promise you'll be back.
Ouch.
Because that was a very hard thing for Natalie. And when we got up here, I was going to go to Idaho, and she freaked.
Sure.
And I didn't realize until later on, I started kind of analyzing, she would start freaking out about certain situations, and I was like,
she's associating it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. She's got some major trauma from, hey, we're going to the hospital, urgent care, and we're going to come on back.
Yep.
And she never seen her dad again.
So if I'm going to Idaho and I'll be back, or I'm sick and I'm going to the doctor, I'll be back, mm-hmm. then
yep.
she doesn't have much faith in that.
Yeah.
Ouch.
So that's one thing I do recommend to people,
be careful.
Make sure those goodbyes going out the door happen.
You hear that, like, other stories, you know, when you look, because, and we talked about this just a little bit ago, that it's easy to look back and see the premonition. It's easy to look back and say, oh, God was preparing me, but then it's really hard to see it in the moment. And so you hear these stories where the dad was going off to work and the kid just wanted one extra hug, and he's like, I don't have time for this, but he puts his briefcase down, yeah. Turns around and does that hug. Sorry, you were supposed to cry first, not me. But that was the last hug they got. You know what I mean? So
it is true. It is.
Wow.
You know, and now when I talk to people, I had spoke to a young man and he had wanted certain things and he was going to talk to his father. And he's like, you know, if he doesn't hear me out, I probably won't talk to him for a long time. I said, don't do that. Wow. Don't ever do that.
Yeah.
And he's like, what do you mean? And I told him.
You never know.
Said, you really don't know when your last goodbye is. So do not let emotions get in the way of sharing that love.
Yeah.
Because you'll regret it real bad. I know that's one thing. Friends and family have said, you know, I think of those times that I ignored the call.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a moment that I missed out.
Wow.
So, kind of changes perspectives a little.
Definitely. Yeah. Let's talk about grief a little bit. I think for someone who's never experienced a loss in that way, we don't understand, or we expect this grief process to look a certain way, to wrap up in a certain time frame, to, you know, and I think even you apologize at times. You're like, oh, sorry, I've been struggling this week, or, you know, especially when we were first friends,
yeah.
You're like, I don't know what's going on. I'm like, well, let's see, it's your anniversary date is coming up, or Paul's birthday is coming up, or his death date. Like, of course you're going to have these emotions around it. But even still, like when you came this week, you were like, I've just been really emotional this week and I'm, you know, sorry. And I'm thinking, you don't owe me an apology at all.
In my mind, my grief was going to be over in like 6 months.
Oh, sure. Why not? Wrap that up.
The more you do, the quicker you go.
Mm-hmm.
You just get through it. Like, that's what you have to do. I remember, one of the first, when he first passed, I got on Facebook grief groups. And one of the topics was holidays.
Mm.
And I was surprised how many parents, they had lost their spouse and they weren't doing holidays. They weren't doing Christmas. And they had kids.
Mm.
And I remember commenting and I was like, for me, I want to try to keep some happiness in the home.
Yeah.
And a woman replied to me and she said, I'm the same way. I lost my husband though 5 years ago, she said, and the one thing that I learned from grief, it is the most selfish emotion.
Mm.
And it's true. I mean, realistically, my response to Brayden when I found out Paul had passed,
mm-hmm.
in a sense, that was selfish.
Sure.
I didn't think about him. I didn't think about his feelings, nor Natalie's.
Yeah, true.
It was just, I'm going to go pick up his stuff and come home.
Mm.
That's it. I thought, oh, okay, like 6 months to a year, I'll be through it. And it is not that way.
Wow.
It is a roller coaster, and you don't know when the twists and turns are going to come.
Yeah.
And what's going to set it off. And then there's other dates that aren't huge dates that you don't even realize are going to come into play.
Yeah.
So April's hard for me. Okay. And I was like, I don't even understand why. Why is April hard? this is, we have no dates. It's when I conceived Brayden.
Wow. You wouldn't
and
even...
it took me a while to figure it out. It was almost the end of April when I'm like, what major thing happened that has me so stuck there? And that's when we started our family.
Yeah.
Not meaning to, but we did.
We all have a story like that.
So, and it's, I think it's hard for other people to understand, you know.
Mm-hmm. Because we've moved on, right? Yeah. Like, I don't know what's your problem. Your husband? I don't know. I didn't even know this guy, but I've moved on. So you should be fine, mm-hmm. right? That's kind of the attitude you get.
Yeah. And then I think you also, you try to hide it from everyone, you know, or at least I do. I'm starting to learn to reach out, but oftentimes I think to myself, this is not anyone's problem but mine.
But other people love you and want to support you, even though it's not our quote unquote problem or we don't understand. We do understand our friend is hurting and sad. So,
but I guess I was very surprised how long the grief process has been for me, because I thought I would be better at moving forward. I mean, shoot, I up and moved our kid, like Paul passed September 29th. By October 29th, I had kids and I moved up here.
Yeah, you did still move up here.
Yeah. So within a month, everything was up here. And so I just thought, if I just keep pushing, that grief will go away.
Yeah. But I think, I mean, Madalie's young still. Mm-hmm. She's going to graduate high school. She's going to get married. She'll have her first baby. I would imagine that all these feelings, just that loss, that... her dad should be here for this. Her dad would have loved this moment. Her dad, you know, or grief for her. Yeah. Madalie should have her dad here to walk her down the aisle. Madalie should, you know, and Brayden too.
Yeah. Graduation was really hard.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like my son was cheated.
Yeah.
And the other part of grief that I didn't understand, you're not only grieving the person you lost, but that whole life that you two had planned.
Yeah.
That you hadn't gotten to yet.
And so life keeps going, mm-hmm. this plan that you had, and he's not there to check off the benchmarks.
And whether you like it or not, your whole life gets turned upside down because you had this one picture with your partner beside you.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. Like I told my mom, I said, it's really crazy. Half of my life was spent with him. And now all of a sudden, he's just gone.
Yeah.
And it took a while for me to get past the grieving the loss of the life we had planned.
Hmm.
And I didn't ever think about that, you know.
Yeah.
All the other aspects of grief that come in. Because they usually just talk about just missing that person. But there's a lot more.
You're missing the life, mm-hmm. the potential.
Yep.
Wow.
And so you go brain dead too. That's the other thing.
Mm.
And you forget things because I was going to say something and I do not remember.
Which is quite all right. Okay, so we had talked a little bit earlier before we started recording some of the takeaways that you took from losing Paul. Do you want to talk about some of those?
So one of the big ones is we're not in control.
Hmm.
The Lord is.
Yikes.
That one's hard.
We think we're in control.
Yeah. And it's all God's timing and... So the control one was really a big takeaway for me because mm-hmm. I kind of am a control freak. And earlier in our marriage, I got life insurance. And Paul's like, I should get life insurance. And I was like, no, that's just bad juju. And he's like, what?
Okay, we're going to talk about that in a minute. But yeah, keep going.
I said, here's the thing. I'm going to die first. So I'm the only one that needs life insurance. Mm-hmm. You don't need it. That's great in a theory, but come to find out, you don't get to decide which spouse dies first. Unless it's an illegal. But I definitely, one thing I learned was it's all God's timing. Mm-hmm. And be prepared, because it can happen at any time. What I think two months after my 40th birthday, I'd be a widow? Absolutely not. No. And him not having life insurance made it much harder.
So let's talk about the life insurance, because you and I have talked about this quite a bit. So my husband, he says we don't need life insurance for him because when he dies, I have the business and I'll be taken care of that way. Except you have the business, your husband's business, and you are not taking care of him that way.
No, because at the end of the day, he had the contacts. Mm-hmm. He had the knowledge.
Yeah.
And, you know, the funny thing is, he's like, oh, well, we have so-and-so, and you can trust him. Mm-hmm. No, you cannot.
Which is so, like, because I'm one that, you know, I want to give the benefit of the doubt. I want to see the good in people. I know that our CFO, he would make sure I was taken care of. But the reality is a lot of the people just take opportunities, or they're like, well, that ship's about to sink, so I'm going to jump and go to another company and not see it through, you know. And so. Yeah.
And the other problem is, what I didn't realize, the last thing you should be doing right after a death is trying to run a business.
Yeah.
You are in such a fog.
Yeah.
And yet you think you are doing great. And grief takes a hold of your body in so many different ways. And the forgetfulness, the not thinking clearly, it really is a thing.
Yeah.
And so running a business and having all these obligations and
bills and maintenance.
Yeah. It's the last thing that somebody who's grieving should be in charge of.
Yeah. Now, how familiar were you with the business before you were thrown into the business?
We had just transitioned. He used to follow work over rig. Mm-hmm. And then we transitioned over to production. Had he continued to follow the work over rig, I knew the ins and outs. Because the good thing with Paul and I was, he would call. We would spend hours a day on the phone. Like,
nice.
So I knew all the guys on the location. I knew the ins and outs of the pros and cons of each company man, who the company men were.
Yeah.
I was very knowledgeable in that aspect.
But since you had just switched over to a different area of business.
Yeah, then it was all a whole different thing. And so, paperwork-wise and, like, federally, that was a learning curve for, he knew the federal laws, but, like, filing and that, I had learned to do that. So that wasn't a big deal.
Oh, good.
But, it was very interesting learning how much he withheld from me of what he did, because I just thought he held water. you know.
Do-to-do. My husband's a truck driver.
The air leaks he fixed. The hoses, I guarantee he fixed and never mentioned to me. All these little mechanical things he was taking care of and never burdened me with.
Well, and why would you care to know about any of that? I wouldn't care to know about any of
that. Except for once he passed, and then I have drivers calling me. And we have this, and that. Like, within 2 weeks of being up here, Paul had a guy who was truck boss and a driver. He calls me and he's like, so this is a phone call I've never had to make before. The two semis have been in a wreck.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, what? Did you guys hit each other? He's like, what? No. I was like, okay. I don't understand. They had parked next to each other, slept, and a pickup that was manual.
Oh my gosh.
Was not putting gear. Rolled back and hit both of my semis.
At the same time.
Yes. And of course, the company that the pickup belonged to, they didn't have insurance.
Oh, of course not.
And so. It's all those little things that you don't think about that could pop up that, as a widow, you're not going to want to deal with.
No.
So just have life insurance. So if things need to slow or you need to bring somebody else in to take the spot that he held, you know, because do you go to all of the company lunches? Meetings with all these.
Well, so, and that's a good, like, I think a lot of times people think, oh, life insurance to cover funeral expenses, or I have enough in my savings account to cover funeral expenses. But that's a day, an event.
The tip of the iceberg.
Like, that's the easy part, right? Yeah. It's the, how do I manage being a single parent, paying my bills, whether he went to work or he owned a business, or, you know, the partner, then, like, how do we survive for 6 months with no extra income, or, you know, that's where the life insurance really comes in.
If you were the caregiver for your kids and you have to go get a job, who takes care of your children then? You
know? Take care of the or do you need some kind of education to get back into the workforce?
Exactly.
Or
it's a much bigger picture than I think a lot of people realize.
Yeah.
And so I definitely, now I'm a
you're an advocate.
Yeah, I'm an advocate 100% for life insurance.
So what about those people that, like how you said, it's bad juju, it's a bad omen if I get life insurance? Because I do feel like people kind of, well, if I get it, I'm inviting it. Or even when I talk to my parents, they're, you know, older. We really need to be having these end of life types of conversations. And the pushback I get is, oh, you're just pushing me in the grave. You're just wishing me dead already. And I'm like, no, but it's the chances of you guys passing. I mean, that is what it's we do real. The day after we are born, like that we're on that trajectory to pass away. So we need to be having these conversations, but they're so uncomfortable and but they're so necessary.
Somehow we need to make the discomfort go away, because realistically there is expenses. And do you want to leave that on your family's shoulders? Like I have told Braden, you know, I have $1 million policy, but in this day and age, that's nothing.
Well, and if he had to raise his little sister.
And he's already committed to that. He's told me.
Yeah.
No one else will raise her. It will be me. And I'm just thinking, okay, but my million ain't going to last him very long, even if he's frugal with it, because he's going to have to work. He's going to have childcare. And here's the other thing. A lot of people offer help, but at a certain point, you feel like you are taking advantage of that help that's offered, and you don't want to take it anymore.
Sure.
And so having that extra financial to ensure they're, my biggest thing is you need to have that time to grieve.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're sitting there 3 years later still grieving and wondering what's going on.
I think you're still going to have some sort of grieving process, especially all the different, and it's not even steps, because I don't feel like grief is a stepping ladder and then you get off of it. It's kind of this like whirlwind tornado, because some days it's acceptance, some days it's anger, some days, you know what I mean? Like you feel all the different things. But do you, if you were allowed to just sit in your feelings those first few months, do you think that would have helped where you are today? I mean, I would assume you would still have feelings, other emotions, right? Would it have looked different?
I think that there's a possibility. I think that the fog might have lifted a little bit more.
Okay.
You know, I don't think I would have been fully able to sit consistently, because I will tell you, the first week, I literally thought I was going to have a heart attack. The pain was so bad. It was a pain I never experienced. Mm-hmm. Even when Brayden came early, never did I experience the level of pain. Like literally heartache.
The physical pain, not just the emotional.
And that was the other part of grief I didn't understand. That I in my mind it was all emotional, but we forget that emotions take a toll and it becomes physical very quickly.
It comes out, yeah. Yeah.
And the aches and pains in your body.
Wow.
You tend not to realize. And that goes for any type of grief, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we kind of just brush it off. We're getting old, aches and, you know.
Oh, we're very good at excusing and brushing off, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So how do you, moving forward, what do you do to honor Paul? What do you do to allow your kids to have conversations? What, like, how do you open that grief up and allow your kids to grieve?
Oh, that's a great question. I'm horrible at it.
Says who?
A lot of people. It took me almost a year to write the obituary.
Well.
Because in my mind, it made it so much more real.
It makes it pretty final.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. His celebration of life gets pushed off every year.
Yeah.
Because in my mind, that truly is the end. And I'm not ready to go there.
That's fair.
And I'm starting to realize, though, it may have been a better option for my kids to do the funeral, to do a funeral. But then on the other hand, it was when COVID was killing people.
Yeah, so you wouldn't have had much of a funeral anyways, right? Yeah,
you know, so going forward, I'm not quite sure. It definitely still comes in waves. I think, though, talking about it needs to happen.
Yeah.
And in our household, that is not something that happens.
Well, you're not very good about talking about it.
Nope.
Brayden's very good at shutting down.
Yes, and he's taught his sister to do the same. And we recently found that out.
So.
And we were having some behavioral issues. And little things that she would maybe cry for 5 minutes turned into at least a 2-hour cry session. And it would end, and I mean, she would get, her and I would have horrible fights. And by the end, I would be like, you know what? This isn't even about that.
Yeah.
This is about Dad. That.
Oof.
And you move on. That's what you do. And I would go to her brother and I'm like, do you know what your sister just told me?
Do you know what that sounds like, Brayden?
So glad you could share that, because now this is what we have.
Yeah.
We have this poor little girl who is at an age who's still trying to just even learn how to deal with feelings. Yeah. But then she has this very big thing that that she does have to cope with.
Yeah.
And definitely this summer we will do a lot more coping, because if we try to do it during school, we end up not going to school, and it's just a disaster.
Yeah.
I have learned valuable lessons, though.
Good.
So I have a very good friend who, her loss is, I couldn't imagine being in her shoes. Mm. And I remember the first 2 days or so after Paul passed, she sends me a TikTok, a hilarious TikTok. Do you know how grateful I was for that?
I feel like there's this cloud of grief that we have to approach you in a solemn, oh, Lacey's grieving, her husband just passed away. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Instead of allowing those joyful moments. I'm sure it was super cathartic. Like, how healing was that for you to have a funny TikTok come your way, especially from someone who understands?
Mm-hmm. And instantly I texted her and I said, I am so sorry. She's like, for what? And I was like, for all the times that I reached out to you and said, how are you doing?
Yeah, let's keep you sad. Yeah. Let me sit in your sad with you.
I said,
which is good too.
But I mean, if people need that, kudos to them. Her and I don't. We get each other.
And oh, what a blessing.
She's like, yeah, it's really hard when you are having those good moments and somebody reaches out.
Mm-hmm.
And they, it's not that they mean malice.
No, no.
But it pulls us right back to the dark.
Yeah.
And so now I'm like, I'm going to go ahead and share some funny or inappropriate TikTok, depending on who I'm dealing with.
Yeah, whoever.
So, because you still need those moments to pull you out of it too.
Yeah.
It's just as important.
Wow.
So.
That's good. I remember I had a friend that her husband had passed away probably about a year before this incident happened, and I had gotten a new ring for my 20th anniversary, and I didn't show her. And when she found out, she's like, why wouldn't you show me your new ring? Like, I want to see it. And I was like, well, and she's like, is this because my husband passed away? And I'm like, well, yeah. And she's like, I am not expecting everyone, like everyone's life to stop. Like, this is like, how happy for you. You got this, you know, your new ring for your 20th anniversary. Like, well, you know, that's, those are great things to celebrate. And I just felt so guilty. Like, yeah, you won't have that. You won't, you know, and, but I was assuming the emotion there. Right. And I was assuming that would be best for her. And she felt almost like I was then choosing that for her. So I was keeping her out of a part of my life.
Yeah. Cause
like she couldn't handle it or something.
We still want to be happy for our friends.
Yeah.
And if it's a lot for us, we have the option. Okay. For right now.
Yeah.
I'm going to be a little selfish and not respond, but I'll come back to it.
Yeah.
Like still include us. And I think that's the hard part, like the tiptoe.
Yeah.
People tiptoe. I remember my mom took time off of work right away. And she's like, well, what do you need?
Mm.
I don't know.
I don't know what I need yet.
I need to be away from everyone. I need to let this all sink in.
Yeah.
And granted, everyone is different. Everyone handles it different. Some people need people bombarding them.
Yeah.
But you have to also realize some people need people to leave them alone.
Yeah.
Like with Brayden, I know when he's struggling.
Mm.
He hops in his pickup and he's gone to the lake.
Yeah.
And depending on the speed, I know how bad it is because I have him on Life 360.
Yeah.
And when he gets home, I'm like, really?
How's it going?
You thought that speed was okay? You're trying to put mom in the grave too? But he needs that alone time as well.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that I discussed with Natalie, because in the beginning she was really good about dealing with the grief.
Okay.
But she hurt her brother too much, and I told her, I said, I know there's times you just want to be alone,
because
naturally as a mother you want to go in and hold them,
of course,
you know. And but she there was certain songs that she would play, and Little Miracles, and there was another one, but by Brandon Lake. And once I heard those, I knew where we were going.
Yeah.
And I would try to go in and comfort her. And finally she said, can I just be alone? And I'm like, yes. It was a not wanting to say yes, but I said, yeah. I said, brother and I like our time alone with it. Yeah. I said, so yeah, I can. I said, you just let me know. How about before you start playing the song, you come to me and be like, I'm sad and I want to be alone.
Yeah.
And shut your door.
Because that way you're not, what's going on? What's, hey, let's talk about like, no.
Yeah.
Like your little safe word or something.
Yeah. So. But moving forward, I'm not quite sure.
And how do you prepare, right?
Yeah. I'm still learning.
Yeah.
Like the last month and a half has been a lot of tears. And I just finally put together, it's because there's a lot of dates.
Yeah. Well, March is your anniversary.
January was his birthday.
Yeah.
So, and I'm still at that place that we don't do the birthday. I'm not ready for that, which, once again, selfish.
Yeah, but you have to do where you're comfortable too, right? There's no, I don't think there's any rules on grief, but I think we assume we're supposed to be a certain way. We're supposed to either get over it. I'm supposed to, like, outwardly, my cries, my tears are supposed to look a certain way. I'm supposed to be upset on a birthday instead of maybe on the birthdays you are talking about all your favorite birthdays that you guys had or silly things Dad did on our birthday tradition. You know what I mean? Like, there is no rule that it has to look a certain way. But at the same time, there's no rule, so how are we supposed to do it, you know? Yeah.
The other big thing that I struggle with that I didn't realize would be such a struggle, the going from married to widow, and that saying in the vow, till death do us part, I wish it was that easy.
Well, because there's got to be some sort of feelings of betrayal, or
100%.
I'm like, is that what the like?
It really is. Like when I decided to start dating, I struggled with the feeling of I was cheating.
Yeah,
100%. Cheating on both, you know.
Sure.
Cheating on my late husband, but I'm also cheating on the new man in my life because
you saw a lot of feelings.
I still love my late husband too.
Yeah.
And that was something I didn't even realize would be a problem.
I don't think that's something that's typically talked about. Or no. I mean, maybe I'm just not involved in the grief world, but yeah, that would be a whole different set of. And then what do the families think? Exactly. Oh, you've moved on awfully fast. Why haven't you started dating yet? The kids, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you've got young kids, you need a man in the house. You need, like, oh my gosh, all the advice, all the assumptions, all the. So.
And then there's my daughter. We, you know, Dad's passed. And we move up here and she tells me, can't you just go get me a new dad? Come again, daughter?
Girl, it ain't that easy on a good day.
Just go to the store and buy one?
Ooh, that would be fun.
Right?
Let's go shopping.
And I was so taken back, but that comes from in our family, I'm the disciplinarian. Like most, in most families, it's the husband, the dad.
Yeah, so she's looking for a Disneyland parent.
Yeah, exactly, because that's what Dad was. And so that has been the hard part for Brayden, because I'm like, okay, you know I'm a lot to deal with. You know I'm the disciplinarian. When Brayden was little, people would be like, I'm going to tell your dad. And he's like, that's fine.
Just don't tell my mom.
And they're like, what? And he's like, as long as you don't tell my mom, I'm good. And so I tend to try to remind him, okay, you have to remember, your sister doesn't have dad to go to. So she now tries to go to him, but he really likes the role of bratty big brother.
But then Brayden?
There's other times that she will just be like, I need my brother.
Yeah.
And
they have a super cute relationship.
Sometimes he appeases and other times he doesn't. But
well, they can navigate that.
Yeah. As he gets older, he's starting, I think, to realize that, okay, I have to be a little more kind to my sister. And then your poor husband.
Well,
she just bombards him with that. Like, it's funny because the people who are similar personalities to Paul, she instantly will gravitate to.
Well, of course. It reminds her of her dad.
Yeah, it's very interesting how quickly she picks up on it, though.
Yeah.
Like, she can read people so fast. Wow. It's amazing.
Well, kids, right?
Yeah. But, yeah, about that was... It was a very interesting conversation when she's like, just go to the store.
Like,
okay.
All righty. Let's see. Where do we begin? Well, I'm glad you can laugh about things. I'm glad you can. I'm most grateful that you can look back at the lessons you've learned. And maybe you didn't pick up on some of those things while they were happening, but it has been a good testament to you now not to take it for granted.
Mm-hmm.
To, you know, like, we talk about the ding, you know, following the beings and, you know, don't let things pass by because it's not convenient. But like, hey, if I get that prompting to reach out to somebody, you know, call a friend, whatever it is, that, you know, you really act on that.
You do. And I'm very big on sharing, reminding people don't get so busy building the life.
Yeah.
Because...
Or building that future.
Yeah.
Enjoy where you are right now. Because
you're not guaranteed.
Mm.
And that's a hard one. And even after Paul passed, I'm still learning to follow those promptings, you know.
Sure.
I had a friend that I had known since I was 4 years old. And actually, I would not know Jesus the way I do had it not been for her grandmother. But I had had a prompting to get a hold of her and to tell her thank you for her friendship and for being able to go to church with her and her grandma when I was 4. And I didn't. And 4 or 5 days later, I found out that she had just passed.
Wow.
And she was one that she needed that message.
Yeah.
She needed to know that the Lord was waiting for her.
Yeah.
And so I think my biggest takeaway on it through all of this is listen to those promptings and don't take for granted the time you're given with people you love and care about.
Wow.
Make time for them. Whether it's a text, a call, it doesn't matter. And don't let anger sit in between.
Yeah, I agree.
Because they could be gone tomorrow and you have a whole lot of regret.
Yeah.
So.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing your story, and that is great advice. And you know, I would never hope that for anyone to be in the same situation, but chances are we will all be there.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, doing that, following those promptings and just really living in the moment and take, you know, loving where you're at and loving the people around you. And I think that's all great advice. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Midlife Chaos. If you liked what you heard, please leave a review. I sure would appreciate that. And of course, don't forget to subscribe so you never miss a new episode. If you want to see what else we are up to, check out my Instagram at The Midlife Chaos or join our Facebook group, Midlife Chaos VIPs.